Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of What's on the Other Side. This is Max Schumacher, again, filling in for Drake Jones. He's out right now working on a couple things, actually currently helping a friend of his on a documentary slash mini film, and not allowed to release the details yet, but he may decide to himself. We'll get to that later on, but regardless, he has his hands full, and he's going to join us in a little bit. We do have Rodney on the line, but before I let him on, I just want to let anyone know who is listening right now. We're going to have Aaron and Joe from the Suncoast Paranormal joining us a little bit later, so feel free to call us at 646-668-2170. Call us anytime during the show. We always get to the callers after about the first 20, 30 minutes, but we're going to go ahead and have Joe and Aaron joining us here in about an hour at 9:15 Central, 10:15 Eastern time, so they will probably have some things to talk about. We have some questions for them, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of callers and listeners. So I'm going to go ahead and get Rodney on, and we will get everything rolling. How's it going, Rodney?
Howdy, Max. Doing good. Glad to be on. Are you receiving me okay?
Everything sounds beautiful.
Okay, good to see you.
Yeah, so you know, there's always a million things to talk about, and there's not enough time to talk about it during a day, so we'll just get everything going now. I talked to Drake. He's hopefully going to be getting a hold of us in about 20, 30 minutes, so we'll wait for him to call, and who knows what's new with him. But I was going to wait for a few different subjects to talk to Joe and Aaron about, just general questions from them. But the main thing right now, I was going to we've talked about it for the last few weeks. The media has been talking about it forever, and I'm not trying to, by any means, talk about the same thing. But it is developing over and over. And recently, this is my favorite one yet, 11 teens were arrested in France, armed with knives. And they were arrested in Paris, France, with knives, armed. Dressed as killer clowns, and the point being, this clown epidemic thing has become so not a paranormal or a supernatural or even a conspiracy theory as much as it is a viral, in my opinion, social media or whatever you want to call it, phenomenon. But I mean, we've been talking about it for quite a while, and it seems like it's escalating from something funny that, you know, the person standing there, not that that's funny, but trying to scare children or, you know, outside of a high school that they go to, just trying to draw attention to themselves, to now, like we heard about in Indiana, the man who dressed as one and ended up passing away, who was shot. I can look the exact number up right now, I'm sure, on the internet. But we're hearing all over the place, not just any place in the United States or any location. There's no real demographic or anything going with it. It's just people are dressing up like clowns and doing unknown, bizarre things. And it's not stopping. And it's not some fad, I guess, that died out real quickly, which I find bizarre. If anything, it's building up and building up. So do you think it's becoming more or less a following or a cult that is forming? And I know that that's a very, you know, loose, antiquated way of saying cult, but is this actually becoming something that's going to be a real thing, or is this just a bunch of bizarre, you know, chalk it up to really nothing? What do you think, Rodney?
Good question. What's happening here, as far as the kids and stuff and the younger generation, kids are going to be in gangs, and they're going to have a knife on them. That's sort of a part of the course when it comes to kids these days. They tend to gravitate towards the gang mentality where they're, the more the merrier. But what happens is when, of course, individuals may be smart and the mob is completely insane. So what's happening, I think, is that, yeah, I mean, kids are going to find a way to do damage one way or the other. And it seems like to me, especially with these kids, you know, either taking this as anything else. Now, do you think it would be such a phenomenon if the original starters of this, you know, started it out by dressing up as ballerinas and wearing tutus? Do you think there'd be killer tutu wearing people out there? I don't think so. So, but I think this goes deeper than other things, because it's been in the media as well. Even if you look back, even like, what was that movie? The Pick of Destiny, where basically Jack Black is there and he's sleeping on a bench, but he gets terrorized and beat up by these three guys dressed up like clowns. And so it's like some sort of weird inner city hazing ritual where people just go around and, you know, terrorize other people and bully them, you know, and scare them and things like that. But what we talked about before last week was that, yes, if you do that, be prepared for retaliation. Now, are people going to get in trouble now for shooting somebody with a clown who's got a paper knife or even a real knife? Yeah, he came up across a bunch of kids
that all
had real knives. Would you feel obligated to defend yourself in some way? And if you did have a gun or a concealed carry license, is this going to be a lawful discharge of your firearm? And so I think it goes deeper than just maybe necessarily an internet fad. I think it's actually been around for a lot longer than that. But when you start to see copycats, like what we're seeing now, you're seeing copycats. And so how extreme it gets is all up to, you know, people and how they want to jump on this bandwagon. And like I said, unruly kids are going to want to have an excuse to do, you know, bad things. And if they see this thing on the internet happening where people are getting arrested or doing bad things as clowns, they feel that somehow that, you know, if you paint your face, then no one's going to recognize you. If you dress up as a clown, no one's going to recognize you. So then you can kind of get this euphoric feeling of being able to get away with something that you normally wouldn't. You can run around town and still, you know, the cameras can take pictures of you, but you're not going to be able to tell who they really are. And we've seen other, you know, applications of this in other gangs. Of course, they weren't dressed up, you know, as clowns, but if you get enough people together, they can ransack just about any store or anything and get away with it because there's too many of them and they're all running in different directions. But I really think that the whole ramping up, coming up with Halloween as well, and you're going to see people that are mentally ill or have, you know, issues or, you know, hate society or whatever it might be, or have a grudge against people or in general or anything else, and they're going to go out and use this mask as a clown to get out their aggression. And like I said, I feel kind of sorry for the people that are going to do it, because I really feel that they're going to end up on the wrong side of the stick when it actually comes down to them jumping out of the bush and scaring somebody. You know, and when you do that, I mean, somebody has a right to defend their own life. And when they do that, they're going to use possibly deadly force. And, you know, so God knows what's going to happen this Halloween with that. But, you know, like I said, it's in the media, it's been sort of in movies, and kids can attach themselves to this really easily, this subject of dressing up and then going out and being belligerent and, you know, delinquent and, you know, terrorizing people and things, and it's just an excuse. And so I think the police are going to have their hands full over the next few months, but I don't see it becoming an entire cult necessarily. Now that you mention it, I guarantee you that there is a clown cult out there underground somewhere who probably does, you know, mean, nasty, sick things and, you know, things like that, but who knows? I think it'll probably blow over couple months, maybe after Halloween. You probably won't hear about it as much. But like I said, you know, why the clown thing? Couldn't you dress up as something else, like Freddy Krueger or, you know, elephant or, you know, whatever it might be. Costumes are one of those things that allow people to get rid of their inhibitions by pretending that no one knows who they are and no one can see them. So it's almost like burying your head in the sand. Like, suddenly the inhibitions are gone and they can't do any wrong because their face is painted. So I think we're going to see more.
Right.
I don't know. I think we're going to see probably some deaths, some shootings. possibly some stabbing.
Yeah, we are already.
Right. So I you know, as far as being a cult, I don't see that. I don't see it being organized in any way, shape, or form. But I do see people that have a grudge or mental problems or, you know, anxiety or any kind of beef with other people or society in general, using this as a tool, like I said, to basically hide their own face and then get the, you know, give them
for
a
sure.
little boost in the ego. So hopefully it won't, you know, come to our own neighborhood. And, you know, because like out here where I live in the country, if you were walking around as a clown in the middle of the night, you're going to get shot probably, especially if you're trying to threaten
people. Especially with most people. Very few people have a non-fear of clowns, just as, you know, they're kind of creepy.
Right, but I can see in the city where there's big parties and costume parties and people everywhere walking around every night on the Friday and Saturday night till 2 or 3 in the morning when there's lots of people and stuff like that. People can maybe get away with it a little easier that way, and then just say, "Oh, I'm a clown. I'm coming from a costume party or whatever it is," and use that as an excuse. But I mean, what about the legitimate clowns? What about legitimate clowns who have real jobs to entertain kids? Are they now being a bad one? Are they now going to all of a sudden have to be under scrutiny because there's all these people out there doing bad things in their image?
You bring up an interesting point, and what you're running into is that, like you just brought up, if you stop and you think about a clown or someone who performs for a circus or performs for whatever, the, you know, legitimate entertainment, and obviously it's something that was a lot more popular back in the day than it is now as far as people hiring clowns and mascots and whatnot, but it's still a legit occupation. But these people perform generally during the day. You know, children's birthday parties and all that. The circus is generally open during the day. Now, you know, unless you're Circus Olay or something like that, it depends where you go. As far as the traditional circus, some of the stuff they do, most of them are carnivals, daytime hours, everything like that. So, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. If someone's walking around dressed as a clown at night in a rural area or maybe somewhere that's, you know, no, whatever. At the same time, even if someone are dressed like that, minding their own business, it's one thing. I see people dressed as all sorts of things. But when they come on your property, they have a knife, a fake knife, they come in your own personal space, they're drawing their attention to you, looking at you, that becomes a whole other subject. And I'm not advocating anyone to go shoot anyone looking like a clown. Please don't do that.
Yeah.
My point being that is just a major fear for a lot of people. I mean, Stephen King wrote a book about it, the movie It. And it was based off one of his own childhood fears. There's just something about the clown, and I think it's funny that that's considered an entertainer or, you know, what people would say kids like. I have met so few people, and I've met people who are artsy and comical people that, A, enjoy the humor behind clowns. It's funny. It's slap-type humor, you know, it's silly and all that. But it's also creepy, and I get that, you know, it could have been designed for children and, you know, adolescent people, but it is just a creepy persona, and it's so easy, like you had said, with mental ill people, you know, people who are maybe just looking for something to be involved in. Are you going to pick the cowboy dressing up like? Are you going to pick the I'm a bank robber with a ski mask? I'm a, you know, pick anything, any character. I'm King Kong. You know, the clown is just something. The second, it blew up so easily. You know what it reminded me of is I can't remember the Halloween movie, but you know, obviously, if you've ever watched the original, not the Rob Zombie ones, and you know, no disrespect to Rob Zombie, but if you watch John Carpenter's original ones, there's throughout the progression of them, people start dressing up like Michael Myers because, you know, they take place on Halloween. That's when he comes back, and you know, that's his time to kill. And there's several times throughout the series of the Halloween movies where you'll see other people dressed up like Michael Myers, just like the phenomenon of there's a guy killing everyone that's dressed up as this guy with the white mask and the butcher knife. And, you know, the people are going to do it the second it's a thing. And obviously that's a fictional movie, but it always reminded me of that when this clown stuff on the news happens with all this, because I'm not the one to do that. I hate clowns, and I don't even like dressing up for Halloween costumes to begin with. All the parties and all that, I'm simplistic, but I could easily see anyone wanting attention doing it. And, you do that out in the country. You do that out in a place where it doesn't have to be the country. Just go to a bad neighborhood. Go to a, doesn't have to be. Go to a nice part, of town and someone that just is very protective. If you go on someone's property like that, that's your own risk, I guess.
Right. I think people just need to realize that, hey, if you look to go out dressed up as a clown after dark, you're looking for trouble. It's just straight up. There's no reason for a clown to be out after dark, and that's kind of the way I see it as far as that goes. I don't see professional people who do that for a living, listen to the circus or whatever, going out after dark as a clown. And so, if you were to scare somebody, why aren't people dressing up as Freddy Krueger or something like that and then going out and terrorizing people? The clown thing is really interesting because it's very vague. You can dress up as any kind of clown. You can make a happy face, you can make a sad face, and make an evil face, whatever it is, So I think that gives them this freedom of expression that they don't get with another character. Whereas a clown, you can kind of, as long as you got big shoes and it's a weird looking outfit and kind of poofy hair or whatever and big lips or whatever, you can kind of do the rest of it yourself, and you can make a psycho clown. You can make, so the clown thing genre covers a whole gambit of different emotions that you can put on your face. And so I think that's what the draw is that you can be any kind of clown you want. And when you're a clown, you're not supposed to be doing normal things. We'll see more, and we'll keep up on it. And I'm sure hopefully we won't spend too much time every show into it. Hopefully it'll die off and we won't be talking about it anymore after next month. But we'll see. For
sure. I agree. Always a subject to talk about. You know how it is when these new things happen and you watch it just grow and grow and grow. And it's kind of mind-boggling sometimes when it starts as one thing and turns into something else. But anyways, on to some more things. I didn't know if there's anything new out on your end as far as investigations or anything going on at the farmhouse, Rodney, but I had an interesting story I had read online on a friend's blog that they had posted, more or less an internet friend, not a close personal friend, but their father had passed away, and they had a story about it, and I didn't know, it might take me a couple minutes to go through this. If there's anything you're wanting to get to right away, we'll jump to that. If not, we'll go to my story. Check with you real quick.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we're good.
So, excuse me. I have a frog in my throat or something. Online friend, I follow a lot of different blogs online. I follow Reddit, 4chan, all sorts of various websites and blogs, and always looking for new information, or even if it's not real, I like to try and get to know people and try and figure out, follow them, read their stories, and just hear different things. But a guy I've been following for a while who's not even a member or a follower really of the paranormal, his father passed away. And this was past Tuesday. And they were all in the hospital. And I'm not going to share anyone's name, obviously, or state, just for privacy reasons. But they decided, the family did, to pull the father off life support. Been living in the hospital for a long, long time. Was very miserable. Was just basically at that point a vegetable. And his heart rate had slowly dropped from the 90s down to just, his final breath and all that. So it was the family, the mother, the brother, the sister. They had younger children of the kids, the grandchildren of the father, and they were all there. And the weird thing that happened was the kids, obviously, and I remember this when my grandparents passed away, didn't understand the grandkids, what was going on. It's a very awkward experience, when you're 2 or 3 years old, you don't understand what's happening when someone passes away. So they were just taking a nap, and they had a separate little room next to the hospital room. And when the news came along that the father had passed away of the parents of these grandkids, obviously they were heartbroken. They're crying and they were consoling each other and doing what they needed to do. And the dad of the two kids had checked on them, and they were asleep and they were laying there, passed out. And he noticed that the room was really, really cold. So he turned the air conditioning off in the room. They had a little thermostat in there that you could, turn on and off. Noticed the room was really cold. And turned that off, and they went back in there, and they were consoling and talking to each other again. They were obviously all very shocked, but when he went back in after about 40 minutes, 30 minutes again to check on the kids,
since they were sleeping. They were tucked in a weird way that the family had done, that the grandfather had done, the father had done to his kids, and, you know, no one else would know how to do that. It was just there's ways people tuck in their children, but it was, I guess, a family tradition way they done it, and the kids were tucked in like that. The room was a normal temperature, and the air conditioning was back on and set to a normal temperature. And they checked with the hospital staff, talked to everyone, and they checked with the cameras, and there was nothing. There's not cameras in the individual room that showed that particular spot, but I thought that was really, really interesting. And the point being, unfortunately, we all experienced deaths and families and all that, but it was one of those kind of interesting stories about when people pass away. Basically, the story was about was this guy was saying that his father passed away, and it's almost like his goodbye, tucked his grandkids in one last time and, you know, made sure they were comfortable, and that was their almost closure, made them feel better that it wasn't just a death at that point. It was like, all right, you know, one last tuck him in and good night type thing, which sad, but also kind of a different side of the paranormal. We always talk about ghosts and demons and, oh, God, it's horrible, but there's still that other side of, spirits. And I didn't know – I've never had really – excuse me, I'm losing my voice a little bit. I've never really had an experience with family passing away in front of me often, like that really happening, thank God, yet. But are you familiar with any other stories like that, or what are your thoughts on all that?
It's interesting. I enjoyed the story there. It's definitely one of those kind of things that, you know, obviously you went in there, they weren't tucked in, and it was cold, and it comes back, and then they were suddenly tucked in a special way. Very interesting, that it's the kind of a lighter side, a good side for maybe somebody passing on. Now, not often do people get to actually witness their loved ones or their family members or their parents or whatever it is, you know, die in front of them. Normally it's an accident, or they're in the hospital and they're not there at the time, or whatever it is. But certainly that being there and having the whole family there is going to create a lot more, if you will, spiritual turbulence, with people concentrating very hard and all focusing in on this one thing, especially if you're pulling the plug. You know the time, you know the day, you know the very second. And so it's very interesting that, like I said, this may be, something that has to do with the entire family as well, and the fact that they were there, and the fact that they made a decision to pull the plug, and maybe that's what he wanted, even though maybe he couldn't speak it or was unable to understand what was going on or whatever, with him just being on life support in a coma or whatever it might be. But, there's been studies done that show that if you take the weight of a person after they die and before they die, that there is some evidence that there's missing weight that they can't explain. Because normally if you die or whatever, you might, lose your bowel or defecate, or, lose that part of your weight to your body, and then that would be a physical thing, your urine and your feces or whatever. That's physical and it can be measured. But they're measuring this and then finding that there's a little part of maybe the spirit that has the soul that has a little bit of weight to it. And that can be quantified and actually measured after death, apparently, in some cases or whatever. And so I thought that was really interesting. Kind of goes along with possibly what you're talking about here, is that, yeah, there is a part to your human body, me, myself, and I, your three-part spirit being, that actually can possibly leave the body and therefore maybe even, accomplish things possibly. A lot of people, have these near-death experiences and stuff, and they see themselves leaving their body and all that, but they can't really affect anything around them. But is it something that's changed when you have multiple family members all sitting around, a bunch of loved ones all praying or whatever it might be? Can that actually reinforce your ability to do something after death? Very interesting question.
I hate to interrupt you, Rodney. I do have a caller on the line real quick. I want to get to sorry about that. No, let's go ahead and get to them real quick. They've been waiting here for a second. And let's see. And hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, can you guys hear me all right? Yeah. Hey, it's Shane. I had called him last week about the symbols, and we had a good little chat, and I was texting Max off the air, and I don't have a lot of time here, but I just had a, besides symbolism, I had one quick question. It was reading about doppelgangers, you know, that people always refer to having a double, refer to having a their own duo out there, and you know, I guess the basic question that I have, I read a book that was by Noah Brooks, and it was on the Washington Lincoln Times bestseller, and they talked about basically how doppelgangers are considered always sinister. But people, you know, think it's a fun thing for people to do, be like, oh, you look like this celebrity, you look like a whoever it may be. Do you guys think that this is something that's, if there's something coming after you, or they say it's a, you know, a bad omen, do you guys believe that that's the, what's going on with that, or what's your general take on that? Because personally for me, if I saw someone that looked like me, and I, regardless of my own looks, it would really, really bother me. And a lot of people, for some reason, take it sinister, take it as something that's really not supposed to be happening. It is an omen, you know, get away or maybe move or something's about to happen. And I know we talked about symbolism in the art form, and I meant almost as the form of actual, you know, visualization or I'm not sure. It's a word I know they use a lot, but when you actually see a spirit, I really can't remember it. Apparition, okay, I think it is. You know, you're like an apparition as a form of an omen or a form of symbolism. Have you guys ever seen anyone that looks like you? And I have not, but I've been reading this book, and it just really was something to me that was almost symbolism in itself that I really enjoyed. And I didn't know if you guys have really read about that at all or any experiences yourself, seen anyone.
I've talked about doppelgangers. God, I can't remember when it was. Way back, probably 6-7 months ago, we did a little show on it, and I couldn't even tell you what episode. I'm not sure if they're numbered or not on the website, but that was back when Drake was primarily hosting. And for me, I have not, but I have actually read quite a few things about people who have, you know, experienced or seen people that look like themselves. Like a good friend of mine, Tony, who lives out in California, that's one of his hobbies. Like on Facebook, he'll go there and he'll find people that look like you. And most of the time he tries to find a celebrity, it's more or less like a joke. You know, he'll, in his free time, send you a funny picture with a picture of you, and next to it is a picture of someone that looks just like you, that whoever it may be. And, you know, that's one thing. But actually experiencing something with your own eye, walking down the street and saying, damn, that guy looks just like me, hold on a second. I think that's from what I've always read, and I don't know the Lincoln or the book that you had mentioned. I haven't read that, but the general idea I've always understood is that when people are in their own eyes, see these doppelgangers, which I think, I took German in high school, so I should remember this, but I think it means like double goer, double you, or it can't be you. That wouldn't make sense. Double go, something like that. Goer. Basically, you know, a double of you. The idea is that that's a bad omen, and I understand that. Why? I don't understand. And if you have any information on that, I have not read enough into it. But that the general consensus I always understood is, yeah, if you see something that looks like you, and you know, maybe it's trying to get your attention. The idea is like it got your attention for a reason. You notice that it looked like you or whoever for a reason, you know, never see him again. And usually most of the stories, even weirder than that, are it's not like someone you're sitting next to at a bar talking to or you work with or something. It's wait, who's that guy across from the hall that, or, you know, just getting into the subway or and then they're gone forever. So that's just my general take. I've never had an experience, and, you know, I haven't met enough people that look like me. Everyone, I guess, looks unique, but really, no, not in a good way or a bad way. Just I haven't ran into anyone really that has made me feel like that person looks like me. I'm not a real good judge of looks on people really either when it comes to comparing or noticing similar qualities with features like that. my friend Tony would be the one to talk to. That's like one of his favorite things to do. But, you know, I want to hear Rodney's take, because it would creep me out for sure if I, you know, if I heard saw someone that looked like me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I guess I can take a take on it here. Let's get back to the original question, because your original question last week ties into what you're talking about now, because you had mentioned the mandorla symbol. Now, and the symbol is actually what would be left over if you put two circles and join them together, and then you've got that part in the middle that actually looks like an almond. And if you look into it, then basically what it is that mandorla is just that. It's the Italian word for almond. And the shape itself is actually a symbol for the woman's uvula, and is also used heavily in advertisements. If you look at even our modern society, uses it. They use it in Harry Potter series, in the Gucci advertising. It's in the MasterCard. It's in the Cool cigarette logo. So a lot of companies and you know, very prominent companies have attached themselves to this symbol. But let's talk about a little bit about what it means. It's sort of like to stand in the center of opposing forces. Sort of, and I put this a little bit coming out of like the school of movement, leaving out the judgment, but being right there in the middle of two opposing things. And so basically, what the symbol is really talking about, it actually goes back further than Christianity. Its origins are from the Kabbalah, which is a little bit before that. So early Catholics used it as a symbol to describe the coming together of heaven and earth. And this is similar to the precursors of what this symbol means, is that it's basically depicting the interaction and interdependency of opposing worlds and or forces. And so if you look at the shape itself, it's very conducive. It looks like a UFO type of a shape. It's very, you could see that it would be very aerodynamic. You could see that it would be very, in the water, it would move through the water very well. Things would run off of it. I mean, the shape itself lends itself to a lot of physical properties that are very appealing in a lot of different ways. But what the general gist of the symbol is this idea that there's actually two opposing forces, or two, the yin and yang, and this is the thing in the middle that doesn't, it's like the objective observer. It doesn't actually have judgment, but it's simply in the middle. And some, I mean, I feel like that sometimes too, where I try to see, you know, both sides of most issues, and I try to say this is the most extreme on this side, and this is the most extreme on this side. Somewhere in the middle is really where the answer is, or whatever. But what you're talking about here in the doppelgangers and things like that is where, you know, people see some, you know, somebody that looks like themselves or evil twin or whatever it might be. Is that something that is real? It's one of those things that, you know, I think science is probably a lot to say about this. We kind of know that people have certain traits. There's a certain amount of people out there that have high cheekbones, for instance, if you're Indian. There's a certain amount of people that have a really thick cranial, you know, forehead and things like that. So could it be really that this is a misunderstood thing when it comes to that?
Well, yeah, I know. And absolutely. And, you know, the main, I guess, point I was getting across, that's another whole point. You know, here in America, a lot of us do have a lot of, you know, diverse features and everything. It's, you go over to a different culture and people look very, very similar. You know, you go over to an Asian culture, you go over to, I guess that might be considered racist, so probably should shut up. But, you go over to certain cultures, everyone looks very much similar as far as features not being unique. And, you know, that is certainly you could consider a doppelganger situation, but here in America, it's just become a phenomenon for people to talk about. And it's a form of symbolism, I guess, in itself, not it being, you know, art, not it being drawn, but it being, you know, an actual person. And I don't want to, you know, dive into anything more, I guess, than that, but I appreciate you guys answering my question and everything, and I'll definitely keep listening, and everyone have a good weekend, and thank you.
No, yeah, appreciate the call. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that it's a good subject. And, like, for me personally, I have not seen my doppelganger or anybody that looks just like me. I've seen people that are very similar looking in their
right.
own structure and things like that, because we all kind of have a similarity when it comes to that kind of thing. But, of course, here in America, like you suggested, that we have such a huge bread basket and mixing bowl
yeah.
here that it really is difficult to actually come across anybody anymore that's exactly like you, unless you're, you know, relatives or twins or something like that. You don't see it too much. Now, I don't see it as a bad thing, though. If I would see something that looks like me,
right.
I'd say, oh, it's, you know, an evil thing or anything like that. I have not yet experienced it wholeheartedly myself, so.
Sorry to cut you off. Excuse me, cut you off there a little bit, Rodney. But man, I am losing my voice. I don't know what's happening. I'm being possessed or something. But we have a caller out that's been on the line for a couple minutes, and I don't want them to hang up or anything. So I didn't have a way to get a hold of him. Let's see who this is and get him on the line real quick.
And hi, it's
and, hi, how's it going?
Good.
Hi.
Great.
Oh, I don't know. I can never remember your number. You know, this guy's got more numbers
right.
than he's popular.
Well,
and,
like a very
good to have you, man.
Well, thank
yeah.
you. It sounded like a very interesting conversation going on there. I was going to tell you guys I'm doing something pretty interesting here. And for our listeners, too, I know you guys will find this interesting. I recently watched a documentary on The Exorcist that aired on the Destination America channel. And I'm actually, as we speak, traveling to St. Louis, and I'm going to go to the parking lot. It's a parking lot now of where the Alexis Brothers Hospital was, and there is a legend that states that there is cracks right where in the parking lot. Let me back up. It's a parking lot now, but right where the hospital was, apparently there's cracks, and these cracks, no matter how hard they try to get rid of them, they reappear the next day. So I'm going to check this out for myself. And again, this is one of the most spooky things, you know, in the history of the world. And if anybody gets a chance to check that out, that documentary was incredible. It's called The Haunted Boy, and it goes through the whole story. It was just fascinating. But I'm going to check that out. So what do you guys think about that?
Wow. You're braver than I am, Drake. you know, well, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm obviously down here in Florida. I just recently went to Halloween Horror Nights. For anyone who's not familiar with what that is, it's here in Universal Studios in Orlando. They, you know, it's haunted houses that are based after different things, and, you know, tens of thousands of people show up and drink, and, you know, you walk, they close down the parks, but they keep some rides open, and it's all night, p.m. till 3 in the morning, and it's a great time. But they had the exorcism house there, and I'm losing my voice, I'm sorry. While we were standing there in line, they were playing some exorcism, not just the movies, but real exorcist films. Like, I think it was Emily Rose's one that actually was over in Germany, and where she's screaming Latin like a man. And, you know, this is a 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl at the time who's screaming 999, like, you know, as a man. And for me, exorcisms, demons, demonic possession, that stuff scares the living hell out of me. And I guess that's a play on words by saying hell. But, no, it bothers me. And you're a brave
yeah.
man, Drake. I wish you luck. As far as the I do know the one you're talking about. I don't remember the history. There's a couple stories. I know when you said the haunted boy, there was one that I remember reading about. But that's the old – it's been a hospital – or hasn't been a hospital since, like, the 40s or 50s from what I remember. But back at a time when a lot of people were, I guess, dying and, you know, going through some certain things. It's in St. Louis, you said, right?
Yes, and it's just a fascinating documentary. It actually is – obviously, the movie The Exorcist, you know, the scariest movie of all time, the most famous movie of all time. It goes through the whole history of this kid, and actually he's still alive, and he's 84 years old. And believe it or not, it turned out he went on to become a NASA scientist and doesn't remember any of it, but he, you know, he's obviously not in, like, the Yellow Pages or anything, and there's really no known photos of him. He changed his name and moved away and all that, so there's really nothing known about him. The only interesting thing never before seen audio of the exorcism. And I mean, you'll be, as we say in the intro, you'll be sleeping with the lights on if you have a chance to check that out. And lastly, too, and then I'll listen off the air. I know our good friends Joe and Aaron are going to call in here in a little bit, but I was wondering, I'd like to get your guys' thoughts on this, and if you don't mind asking Joe and Aaron, recently somebody uncovered these like diary entries of Charles Lindbergh, and obviously the famous pilot, and he wrote
more
that
famous for his kid's death probably.
Yeah, right. He wrote in his diary that when he was flying over what is now known as the Bermuda Triangle, all of his instruments wouldn't work, and he was seeing these weird green clouds and was just terrified. And it was not known until about a week ago when someone uncovered a diary of his. And I just thought that was fascining. So I'll listen off the air.
Drake, if I can keep you just for 2 seconds, then I'll let you go. I was going to let you know you can listen off the air, and I want you to – look this up on the internet, and for any listeners, if you go to Google or wherever and you just go to paranormal experience, just type that in, and after that type in haunted Missouri, you're going to get the story, or just type in haunted Missouri Alexian Alexian hospital, and you're going to get the whole story. But my god, you weren't kidding that story about where you're going. It is absolutely one of the scariest things I've ever read in my life, as far as that little boy. And the weirdest one is basically at the end of it, that after all the exorcism and everything that they're doing, he sits upright, and, you know, he's a little boy, and after screaming and doing all these things and convulsing, he just says he's gone, and he turned to normal for the rest of his life. And, I didn't remember anything and all that, so... We'll research more on that, but you know, good luck going there, and please don't stay anywhere close, and bring some holy water or Zach Bagans or something with you.
Well, I appreciate that, but you know, this is what we do, why we're in this industry, to prove that there is something on the other side, and I think we will be able to do that. So thank you for keeping the show going. I'll be back next week. Sounds like we had a really good caller on the line there a minute ago when I was listening, and if you don't mind asking Joe and Aaron a couple questions about, you know, that kind of stuff, they should be calling in here in a minute. So thanks, guys, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. Drive safe, or I assume drive, fly, whatever you're doing. Get there safe and let us know, and talk to you soon.
All right. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Yeah. And again, for anyone listening out there, and then I want to get to Rodney on that. I'm not trying to talk too much. I do not enjoy my own voice. But if you go out to Google, whatever your search engine is, and type in Missouri Paranormal Experience, there's a whole page on it, and it's the Alexian Brothers Hospital, Alexian Brothers Hospital. And, God, there's some scary stuff to read about there, so we'll see what Drake finds. And I guess the case has been closed for a while, but anyone who's wanting to call in, again, we do have some, not to say reserve, but a couple of long-term friends that have been followers and listeners of the show calling in that we need to get to. But for the next few minutes, 646-668-2170. Go ahead and give us a call if there's anything you want to talk about. But yeah, Rodney, what do you think of what Drake was saying?
Yeah, really fascinating. Could it be that not only if you have a successful exorcism, that you have a seemingly new outlook on life, where you might accomplish more had he otherwise, you know, not been exercised, or, you know, obviously, you know, a real possession of that type or whatever, you're going to either be dead or severely mentally or physically wounded or just incapacitated, or you're certainly not a contributing member to society at that point. But the idea is that he's still alive today and that he doesn't really remember it, but he had this passion for whatever to become a NASA, you know, employee and all that, and that takes some doing. So could it be that such an experience like that lends itself to bettering somebody if the exorcism is successful? And certainly, like I said, I if I see something that I believe is real when it comes to exorcism and people acting strangely or whatever, it freaks me out too. I don't like to look at it or watch it because it, I you know, I for some reason I can try, I can tell maybe if it, if it is kind of real. I mean, you know, you can kind of tell when people are acting, but when it starts getting to the point where people are actually concerned and there's doctors and, you know, very high level religious people there, and you know, it's not just a one of the middle thing where somebody's acting weird or whatever, but this is something that usually is ongoing for a while and the family gets so concerned that they have to do something about it. So, but yeah, it's almost like one of these near death experiences. Do you actually, does it benefit you as an individual and how you relate to other people in your life to have an experience like that? And that's kind of my where I'm going with this. It's like it seems like maybe that there's something to this as far as what happens afterwards. Didn't remember it, and you know, possibly doesn't want anything to do with it because obviously, you know, being so famous and all that, yeah, you'd have to change your name, you'd have to hide underground, you'd have to move, you'd have to do all these things. But even despite that, he became somebody of prominence. So there might be something to say about that, you know. So I think that's really interesting. And, you know, what does it take to actually confront such a being creature and you want to do something about it when you know, even according to the stories of the Bible, that when Jesus cast out the spirits and all these kind of things, they actually didn't just go away into the universe. They went into other animals. They didn't just disappear. They went into other things. And so that's really kind of a telling thing there. And it's sort of like, well, yeah, and maybe, you know, and we talked about haunted objects. We talked about haunted locations. We talked about things like that. But is it possible that there's some sort of residual still happening in the area? And that's what I think he's going to
talk well, about. the main story that basically, yeah, since it's, you know, obviously all the things that had happened at this particular hospital were pretty, religion aside, I don't ever want to be that guy, you know, to push religion on anyone. But if you think about just the activity or the reactions of human beings that these people, especially this boy, had while he was there, chalk it up to demons, chalk it up to whatever it is you want to chalk it up to, but it's something that is not normal, regular human behavior. And the fact that it was so medically misunderstood, and it still is today, you know, they can't diagnose right. These people with a particular disorder, and they're having these symptoms that, you know, convulsions and fainting and screaming. And particularly when the voice and the pitch changes and they're screaming in different languages that have happened before, that stuff to me is just, it blows my mind. And, I, you know, I put religion aside for that. You know, whatever it is you do believe, I am not trying to intrude or anything on that. But the main story that, like Drake was talking about, they've demolished the hospital since then. It's a parking lot now. And they, you know, anyone who's ever been in a business or worked at one for long enough, you know, the parking lots get torn to hell and everything's, you know, needs replacement. But the only spot that seems to be recurring over and over and over is these cracks in the pavement right directly above where the exorcism room used to be. So I guess I should say under because it was a building. So right where that particular room was, which is on the corner of the building, that in the parking lot is now, is where that happened. So we'll see what Drake finds. And you know, hopefully I don't run into him anytime soon. If he does get possessed, because I don't need that in my life right now.
Yeah, I think that's a done deal. Obviously they did a good job, and it's ancient history.
That brings up a question, another question for you, if you don't mind me asking. So, you know, you think about the whole movie, the Poltergeist, and you know, we talked about this before. So if something is demolished, you know, you've heard the term kill it with fire. It makes me laugh. But, you know, you think about, oh, this is a haunted house. This is a haunted, you know, like we've talked about it. What's the most haunted castle house? If you demolish the place, if you burn it to the ground, if you turn it into scorched earth, you know, you literally nuke the place, but not literally. You spend some serious time just decimating the land and the structures and, does that cure or cleanse the land or the place, or, you know, is the energy, are the entities tied into the land, the building, the structures, or is it actually, you know, some type of quantum thing we don't understand, to where we can't get rid of it, because the movies kind of make it, you know, seem that they'll follow you home. You can't escape it. The final destinations, the pick a movie,
right.
You know, you can't escape it. You know, well, we got to move from this house, but they follow us. Is that true? Or do you think if you live in a place that's having that bad of activity, or, you know, like they did, they turned it into a parking lot. So there's some cracks in the ground. Did that cure the problem? Did that kill the demon, or is that still there?
Right, right. Interesting question. I think there's actually all the above, most likely. We can't specify one or the other. But I think in order to get past this thing that you're talking about, I do believe you have to have human intent behind it. Now, I'm not talking about just a guy with a bulldozer who's going to bulldoze the building down and not think about it. I mean, I think the intent of somebody who's a scholar, a religious scholar or whatever, there's actually certain symbolism and certain rituals and certain words that you have to use in order to get this accomplished. You can't just be somebody in there who's just going to, you know, either pretend or use a bulldozer or whatever it is. That's not gonna do anything. It may discourage whatever spirits are there from hanging around if suddenly the building is gone, but I don't think that that's the case. I think the residuals of the building are going to be what they're seeing in their realm, and or something like that. And for them, it's probably
right.
Maybe not going to change. But we have talked to Craig, Bill, and Aaron before about that, you know, disturbing certain areas of people who have already had, you know, a lifelong, you know, episode in a certain spot, and then you tear down the house, does that disturb the spirits and make them want to do bad things to people? I don't necessarily think that that's true, but I do think that that may stir things up enough that there may be residual effects happening after that. Of course,
absolutely.
The parking lot could easily be explained. The road wasn't, you know, the parking lot wasn't done. There's a spring underneath the area right there.
Well, you know, that was the point of the reoccurring cracks was basically
right.
They keep repairing it. And I understand, you know, I remember one of the things I had to do at my last job was we did have to replace half the parking lot. And I was in charge of calling different people, and that one spot just keeps reoccurring. And is it conspiracy? Does the land suck right there? That doesn't make it paranormal. Just, I guess the idea is that the activity, especially the exorcisms and the possessions that were known and documented there, and that, you know, they made the documentary like Drake had told us about, you know, a lot of things have been happening, and I guess he's on the road there now. So we'll see. As far as I know, he's with someone that's got a camera, and they're filming more or less documentary miniseries on their adventures there, and we'll see what they're going to uncover. But, you know, it is a parking lot, but there's a lot on the way there, but it's going to be cool. They're not only doing that, they're, you know, a lot of investigations they're doing and research, but always good to see he's out there in the field and doing his thing, and happy to continue the show for him. I want to go ahead to we got Joe and I believe Aaron on the line who have been waiting here for a second, so apologize to them for that, but let's go ahead and get to them and get them on the line.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good.
How you guys
hey,
doing
how
tonight?
You doing? Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good.
Excellent.
Yeah, you know, I know you guys have only been on the line for a few minutes according to the little info screen I got here, but we have been all over the board tonight. We were talking about killer clowns. We were talking about is, you know, evil real or not, possessions, exorcisms. I know you guys are down here in the Florida area. I'm in Tampa myself, and I've had numerous people mentioning the clown sightings to me. And I know it's an exaggerated, fabricated, whatever you want to call it, thing. Have you guys had any sightings, any experience, or anyone bringing that up to you down here?
Not any sightings per se, but I mean, it's popping up all over the place. You know, everybody wants to, make matters worse than what they really are. You know, it's just basically someone trying to stir up a little hysteria, you know, get people a little paranoid. It's just gotten out of hand.
Yeah,
I would agree as well.
And I think they're just going to run into the wrong person one day, and
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be end of that. That's going to be the end of that clown.
Play on words right there. Yeah, and it's already happening. I don't know if you heard about it in Indiana. We talked about it last week on the program, but there was a guy in Fort Wayne, I believe it was, that got shot in the head and killed for chasing someone dressed as a clown with a knife. And, you know, it's a sad way, I guess, for someone to go out, mental illness, whatever it is. We were talking about, is this going to become some Charles Manson-type following of whatever, a cult? Some people just deciding whatever it is, they're going to go through and dress like clowns and kill. And, you know, Rodney and I talked off the air, and I hadn't got to bring this up yet, and I was curious about you guys and your opinion, if you don't mind me asking. Is evil, and I know this is a hard question to answer, do you guys think evil is real? You know, is this a thing that's just someone, you know, you look at the Michael Myers movies, you go back at John Carpenter's movies or whatever, you know, there's just something in someone when they're born and they're evil and they're going to, you know, dress up like a clown and kill people. They're going to murder their family. They're going to start a cult and just do these things. Or is this an experience? Is this combined? Is this demonic?
Well, I mean, it all depends on, you know, the situation because, I mean, evil is just a state of mind, you know. Someone could wake up one morning and just have bad intentions or bad thoughts going on in their mind and want to live it out and see what happens, you know. So it's really a state of mind. Now, I mean, you know, if you want to look at it on a demonic level, you know, you'd be looking at, like, possessions and stuff like that. So it all depends on the situation. But to me, basic evil is, like I said, it's just a state of mind. You know, like Charles Manson, he's, you know, psychotic. So it's a state of mind. You know, it's what's going through his mind at the time and stuff like that. You know, that's my thought on that.
Yeah. Rodney, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I like that. Well, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned it a little bit. We didn't have a chance to really discuss it, but this idea of evil and what it really means, in my opinion, from what I gather, it doesn't necessarily seem to me that people just that think that they're evil. It seems to me that the people that do the evil don't actually know that they're evil or that they're really doing it. Because I think if you get, you know, too far into it, you're actually demented at this point. So did Hitler think that he was evil? No, not according to his book and other, you know, his own, you know, writings or whatever it is. These people that have massacred thousands of people or whatever it is, there's a whole other genre out there of people who are in our society and without our society who actually live their lives as do without will, and they do whatever they want to do. They don't have any reservations about doing something and feeling bad about it later. Whereas the majority of the population is very set on, brought up, even if you didn't go to church, you kind of know what's right and wrong, and you have an internal, like, clock that tells you, you know, the proverbial man on the shoulder, you know, you got the little Satan on your shoulder, and you got the little angel on this shoulder, and they fight back and forth. Hence, the symbology of what we were talking about earlier in the Mandola is the idea that we're sort of in the middle. We're human beings, so we can do both, right? So in our own minds, we can be evil or good, depending on what we see. But it's very strange because as human beings, we look around at the animal world. The animal world doesn't have such a thing as good or evil. When you see an alligator attacking a beautiful gazelle and killing it and eating it, we see that alligator or that snake or that lion as the evil aggressor. And we see the cute bunny or the cute gazelle or whatever the butterfly is as the good little creature who's not doing anything wrong and then suddenly gets pounced on by this evil creature. But yet the animal world has no such thing as evil or good. And yet at the same time, as being human beings, we can constantly, you know, we can actually cognitively think about, well, you know what, if I was a father and I had a daughter and somebody raped my daughter, I would think that that person is evil and I would want to hurt them. Okay, so in my own mind, I can, you know, postulate what I believe evil is. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I think that people that really do out and go do evil deeds don't know in their own mind that they are actually evil or doing evil. I don't know that they're aware of it. I think that you have a lot of people, and, you know, in my opinion, even including politicians and other people who, you know, own chemical factories and things like that that, you know, harm the environment and do all these horrible things. But as long as they're making money, to them, they're not doing anything wrong. And so I think it depends on how far up the ladder you get. If you're a billionaire and you're running countries and you're doing stuff, I'm sure to them, you know, depopulation and things like that are just part of their requirement, and they don't consider it evil or anything like that. So it's weird that the animal kingdom doesn't have that, and yet we're part of the animal kingdom, but yet we do have that. So doesn't that suggest that there's something different about us as human beings that makes us, that sets us apart from the rest of the animal world? And I know a lot of people are on the sort of bandwagon these days that we could, like, we're no better than a pig or a goat or an elephant, and we should, you know, forego all our needs to make that happen. But evil.
As far as the animal realm goes, it's really basically survival of the fittest. You know, they're just trying to survive. You know, as far as like killing another animal, it's not like they can go to a, you know, you can take this anywhere you want. It's not like they can go to a grocery store and, you know, buy hamburger meat or something like that and have to survive. Whereas, as people, you know, we can go to a store and do whatever, or, you know, it's basically, again, it's a state of mind. Some people, some scientists say it's a chemical imbalance in a person's mind that makes them, you know, good from evil. Or you know, again, there's a spirituality that comes in, too, as far as being evil as well. Like I mentioned, you know, like possession and stuff like that. So that's my take on the difference between, you know, animals going out and killing another animal. It's basically survival, you know, they need to survive. It's just a survival instinct that animals have. We have it as well. You know, like we get into a fight or something or into an argument, we get into like that survival mode, you know. So, I mean, yeah, it goes kind of both ways, but, you know, as far as like the animal realm and the human realm, it's apples and oranges, really.
Yeah, isn't it sort of strange, though, is that as human beings, we tend to, because of how we grew up, look at certain things. Why do human beings think that a little bunny rabbit is good, whereas a cat who eats a bird is really evil and conniving and has this evil side to them, when they themselves, don't have that? We're putting that on them. And we do that to ourselves as well, I think. Even with good intentions, we could do something with good intentions that might end up doing something bad to somebody else that we didn't intend. So it's really interesting that we've always had that. Humanity has always had that, and I don't think it's ever going to go away. Maybe people in the future think that technology is going to take over and we're not going to, you know, be the emotional creatures that we were designed to be, that we will integrate electronics and stuff, and then we won't have to worry about evil anymore because everything will be controlled and everything will be monitored. And you won't be allowed to do evil because it'll be rewarded. They can, you know, do certain things. So, very interesting subject, but I'm glad you brought it up anyway, for sure. And, we can see in our own lives that there's evil out there, and we call it evil. It may be, you know, called something different in other lands and other cultures, but we can recognize it anyway. And we do think that we recognize it.
Yeah, and Aaron and Joe, you know, I didn't know if there's anything new on your guys' end, if you guys have had any new investigations or sightings or anything you guys were wanting to chat about. What's new on your guys' end?
Nothing really new on our end. Just, you know, last time we spoke, I was actually just still like in the recovery mode. You know, health-wise, I'm getting better. Not 100%, but yeah, I mean, I'd like to start going out and looking at places to possibly start doing investigations soon, hopefully in the near future. But I did stop by a store where we actually did like a seminar, and I just got like it's weird because when I went in there, I sort of had like the same feeling on the last investigation we did, where Aaron will tell you, I was like totally the opposite of the type of person I usually am. And what I mean by that, while we were there, I had a very, very bad feeling. And the place that I actually went to, they like sell like antiques and occult items. Like they had a room, a reading room where they had like old Ouija boards. And I walked into that room and started to shake and started getting the sweats, and I had to get out of that room. Well, I think they wound up picking something up, and I started getting that same feeling again. So I was in and out in like 5 minutes, and I couldn't stand there much longer. I'm noticing ever since that last investigation we did, I've becoming a little more sensitive. I've always known I've been a little bit of a sensitive, but not as bad, or actually not as good, and starting to hone in on that now and trying to, I guess, enhance it in a way that I could use it, you know, for investigations or if I'm at a place that I don't know, sort of like in that type of situation. It's just a weird, eerie, creepy feeling.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, I would like to maybe follow up on a question that we were talking earlier about, you know, certain things. If you take a bulldozer and you bulldoze down a house that, say, has some sort of residual or spirit or something like that going on in it, yeah, well, what is, in your opinion, is that doing any good, or does it take human intent to actually get rid of whatever it is?
Well, in my opinion is if there's something there, some sort of an entity or that's attached to a location, okay, like a home, let's say, per se,
right.
That house gets knocked down. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, what's going on is going to stop. You know, because, I mean, God knows how many times, you know, these roads have been built over, these houses have been knocked down and, you know, rebuilt new houses. All of a sudden, there's hauntings going on in new homes. You know, what was there before? You know, was it another home? Was it a burial ground? Was it a slaughter, you know, a place where they did slaughtering, you know, like a slaughterhouse or something like that? You know, whatever's in a particular location, in my opinion, would actually most likely stay there, whether, you know, the building is up or, you know, whatever it is that's there, you know, gets knocked down or torn down, or if it's a road, if the road gets ripped up and repaved, it's still part of that area.
Yeah. Right.
So,
and
you
so
know,
get rid of it.
In order to get rid of something like that, you'd probably be looking into, like, you know, it can be something as serious as an exorcism, or it could be something as a blessing, as simple as a blessing. It doesn't necessarily have to be from a priest. It has to be someone who has faith in what they're doing. Because I'm not a priest. I've done many house cleansings before, and every house cleansing I've done, I've never had no one's ever told me about an issue afterwards, except for that last place we were at, because I never got to go back again.
Well,
right.
We, you know, I don't know if you guys were listening before, you know, Drake had called in right before you guys did, and I know you guys are in contact with him, but he's going out to St. Louis to a parking lot, which used to be a hospital, the Alexis Brothers Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. And there's a famous documentary, not famous, I just left throwing that word out, I guess, but maybe soon to be famous, but actually for the parking lot, what it is now, probably the most thing it's ever going to be known for is that case where there's been some exorcisms that happened there with really, really bizarre things you can look up as far as the kid being 4 or 5 and speaking in different languages, screaming, sitting up, and then at the end of it, after the exorcism, like you had said, there was no more problems. The last thing he said was, he's gone. And then supposedly from that point on, rest of his life, he didn't even, the other thing was he didn't remember it. And, you know, whether that's because it's a young kid or that's because it's something to do with it being so traumatic or just in general, maybe that's how possession works. I'm not entirely familiar, but Drake has decided to go there and, yeah, do this documentary. So are you guys familiar at all with that?
No, actually, I'm not. I know he's doing a documentary, but he hasn't really told me what it's about as of yet. I'm going to be reaching out to him sometime next week, and we'll sit down and we'll discuss what's going on, and, you know, hopefully he will make it famous.
Yeah, we'd love to interview you guys if it does.
But a real quick tip, though, about possessions. As I had mentioned earlier, it's basically a state of mind. A possession is one state of mind, and I guess if you want to point normalcy, you know, being normal as far as being possessed and unpossessed. A possession is one state of mind, so it's a good possibility, and, you know, that's why the child didn't remember what was going on, because a possession takes on one mentality, and being unpossessed or, you know, not having any entity attached to him is another state of mind. So you're looking at two different realms there. So, you know, just to answer that quick question, because you said you weren't too sure as to why the kid didn't remember. Well, there you go. I mean, me personally, I'd like to sit on an exorcism. I mean, I have my whole the whole ritual, and I have the whole manual basically.
I think that takes, like I said, a special kind of person to not only, you know, sort of want to be engaged, but you obviously, you and your own personal experiences have had repercussions from this as well that you have to deal with as an individual. And I'm wondering, does this also go into the realm of, say, psychics? Now, we do have debates sometimes on the show about them real or not, and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And as far as remote viewing and things like that go, do they still have, in that field, if you think it's real at all, do they have any repercussions of the things that they do if they actually can contact the other side somehow? Are they actually at all in danger?
Honestly, I haven't really met a psychic that had anything tangible to basically show. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, there's no such things as psychics. I've just never came across one that had anything credible to bring to the table as far as I'm concerned. But like
okay,
I said,
right.
I'm not to say that there's no such thing. I just haven't came across one.
Right. Do you consider that part or just completely separate, say, from remote viewing?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean by the act of being able to precognition or see things in the future that would allow, say, an investigation or something, you know, to be stopped, whereas people can view certain areas where they are not at. And I didn't know if you had any information on remote viewing or whether you think it tied in at all with psychic or psychic ability or, you know, EFT and things like that. Because we know in the past that even the government and police officers have used people who do remote viewing apparently to try to solve cases and things like that. Certainly there have been a number of them in the media here and there, but it seems like it's few and far between, so I didn't know what your take on those were.
Well, I mean, I've met one person in my life, and it was actually during a ritual, a cleansing ritual. And he told me things that basically were to happen several years down the line. I mean, I don't know if he possibly took maybe the way I was as a person at the time and probably just elaborated on that. But in all honesty, yeah, everything that he mentioned did come to light. And like I said, that I believe, you know, there might be psychics out there that are real, but I've never really came across one except for this one person. I can speak very highly of him. But then again, that was during a spiritual ritual. He told me things about myself that I would be going through down the line. Basically, actually gave me an age. Says, you know, before you hit this age, this is what's going to happen. This is what I see in your future. Actually turned around and said, okay, this is what I see as your guardian angels. They're standing by you, trying to comfort you, but you're still going to have to go through this. And I was like, yeah, right, whatever. And, you know, several years down the line, everything that he mentioned started coming to light, and it gave me a whole new perspective, you know. But as far as like, you know, like you said, a psychic saying, okay, well, this is what's going on here. You know, this is what I see. I haven't met another person like him. So until I do, and possibly bring one with me, I really can't say anything, because there's a lot of people that I've met afterwards. Oh yeah, I'm psychic. I could do this. I could do that. Yeah. And I've actually brought a couple on investigations, and it's like, I'm looking at them like, okay, well, what's going on? You know, and they're like, oh, I see this. Mm-hmm. I see that. You know, I'm like, okay, well, you know, what type of proof do you have? You know, could you show me some type of proof? And I'm really big on proof. If you can't prove anything to me, I'm not as likely to be 100% certain and back you up on it. But if I have some sort of proof, if they could prove something to me, then yeah, I'm going to back them up 100%. And believe me, I'm going to say, you know, this person's right on point. You know, I'd bow down to them and, you know, praise them 100%. But until I can actually come across another person that can actually do that, you know, I'm kind of on the leery side of psychics. Even though, yeah, there's been a lot of reports with, you know, police using them, FBI using them, people using them in like missing cases and stuff like that. But on a personal level, until I meet a person like that, you know, a lot of people just want to use that title as being a psychic, you know, to try and boost up their ego.
Because when somebody says the word psychic to me, I immediately think of somebody who's sitting on a computer and somebody calls them, they type in their name, look at all the information that the internet has to offer them, and then manipulates the person on the other end to whatever means so that they can pretend that they're right or give them money or whatever it is. You can see how that could be a manipulation because of the way that the internet works right now. People can
profiled. In that case, we could all be psychics and make some money.
Right. Which is really kind of a bad thing, because then it gives everybody who's maybe really truly that way in a bad light. But if it's just for money, you can see how that's easily done through technology, and it's obvious that that's what most people, I think of when we talk about psychics, because are they really doing any good? Are they doing anything constructive, or are they just, making money off of people and looking up information on the internet? And then obviously there's a very school technique behind manipulating people, and whether or not that this is something that can classify this as evil, if you willingly take advantage of other people and manipulate them in a certain way, is that necessarily evil, or is that just a human nature?
It's not really evil. It's just you know, unfortunately, that's a way of life. You know, I mean, it's like being a salesman. You know, you have to make that sale to make that money. So, yeah, being manipulative, you know, isn't really an evil thing. It's just, you know, it's, like I said, it's part of life. It's something you have to really think about and, okay, well, is this going to benefit me truly, or is this guy just trying to make a buck on me? You know, so you have to take it, you know.
And
Aaron's phrase is, which I love the most. Yeah.
Oh, no, I just went I got a text here from Drake, and he had only scheduled the show for 90 minutes for some reason. So, you know, we only got a minute left now, and I, like I said, I normally don't host, so I don't know what the miscommunication was, but we only got about 60 seconds. I didn't want anyone to interrupt it or besides that or cut off.
Right.
Going to have to wrap the show up, I guess, right now
because
we're running out of time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I good to have you guys on for sure. I'm glad to talk to you again.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely like to talk about the subject again. You know, it's kind of interesting having more of a discussion of, you know, different things and try and open people's eyes as far as what's going on out there in the world.
Yeah,
absolutely. Very good. Yeah, thank you so much, guys, for coming on. I'm sorry about that. I, like I said, if I were the one who set it up, I would have done it right, but I didn't do that, so I guess there's miscommunication or whatever. But maybe tomorrow I'll get a hold of you guys and we can set for tomorrow. So everyone, thank you for listening, and everyone have a good night out there, and keep on letting us know what you see and everything. Thank you.
All right, have a good night.
See you. You too.